From the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA, it's Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin. If you have a medical question, call us at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255. Email sundayhousecall@cfra.com. Now here's Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Good afternoon and welcome to edition number 410 for this September the 2nd. 2012. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and you are listening to Sunday House Call, and we're broadcasting live from the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA here in Ottawa, and taking your calls at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long-distance number. Call in early, we'll get you on the air, spend some time answering your questions, and information that you'd like to know or discuss or even bring up, more than welcome speaking with you and appreciate your calls. I have two. I've been pondering, you know, usually for the first segment of the show, there's some stuff that I either talk about, news item or things that tend to cause me some concern. And there's a couple of things that I'd like to cover. The first has to do with what I've discussed in the past and how our provincial governments like to interfere with our ability to be able to provide care to our patients. And an example of this was this week. I have a patient who has an anxiety problem. There's a particular class of medications that I try to stay away from because of their potentially habit-forming nature, and people get used to them after a while. They develop tolerance, and this is a class of medication called the benzodiazepines. There are a place for these medications, but in the case of, in this case, anxiety, there are other medications that are available to try and treat this. And in fact, there's one anti-anxiety medication that is available that does not have sedating properties. It does not have the risk of tolerance or addiction. And as such, it is a medication. It's called buspirone. It's a medication that is readily available to anybody who has a private health insurance plan or who works in the public sector, public service, and their own insurance plans and that are available to them at their place of work. But for patients who don't have insurance plans, and who are on social assistance, and this patient is now working and still on a bit of social assistance to help her out, but is progressing and doing very well, this medication is not covered. And as a result, you have to make a special application to the Ministry of Health. And it's the Exceptional Access Program. So it's you have to literally write down in a form why you think this patient needs the medication and why can't they use the other stuff. Now, remember, the other stuff has potential addiction and habituation problems and tolerance, whereas this medication does not. And if you give the class of benzodiazepines to a patient, it makes this medication, the buspirone, less effective after they take this. So you want to avoid using that in the first place. So in the meantime, we have proof that this medication helped her because I gave her a small prescription for a week at a time so she could afford it, and it has helped with her anxiety. So we have proof that it works. So I write the ministry after they initially reject my application for her, saying, please, you know, can you cover this for her? And I write back saying how she is using this medication. It is working for her, and that I would like to avoid the use of another medication that has potentially more harm for her. Well, as of Friday, I received an answer back and they rejected it, saying, sorry, prescribe the benzodiazepines because that's what's covered. So here you have bureaucrats telling me how to best treat my patient. And the frustration that not only my patient feels, but I feel in terms of having my hands tied behind my back by not being able to provide what I believe to be the in my patient's best interest in causing no harm or least harm is extremely upsetting to me and to my patient, who cannot afford to pay for this medication long term and now will be literally forced by the government to take this medication that I really don't want to prescribe because they won't cover it for her. So if you have any thoughts on that, because I'm sure it's happened to some of you who may be on social assistance, you may be on disability and have the provincial government covering the cost of your medications, you might have some comments about that, because this is a one of many examples of where this happens, where those that don't have private insurance, either through the government, because public service workers have private insurance through the government, or on their own, can get medications, and those that are depending on the government in their public for public coverage can't get it. So again, this whole idea of universal health care is a bunch of baloney. And until you start to speak up about it and point out these inconsistencies, it's going to be very difficult to change this system. And as I said, it's an extremely frustrating situation when you can't do the job that you'd like to do and provide the care for your patient that you've been trained to do. In other news, the British Columbia Fraser Health Authority has ordered NRX Botanicals Limited to publish a retraction after the company ran an ad in the Vancouver Sun earlier this week promoting oregano oil as, quote, the natural way to help combat whooping cough. And this ad had a picture of a syringe with a needle snapped in half. And the ad says, quote, it's nice to know that vaccines aren't the only choice to combat this highly contagious bacterial disease. So without any evidence whatsoever, right, the BC Health Authority and Dr. Paul Van Bidener of the Fraser Health Authority says there is no evidence, no clinical trials. There is nothing out there that says that oregano oil will help combat whooping cough, which, as you know, there have been outbreaks across the country of whooping cough, and that one out of every 170 infants who contracts this disease will die of whooping cough. So the company has been sent a letter that alleges that the ad violates the BC Public Health Act, and it demands that the company prints a retraction the same size as the actual ad that was in the newspaper, and has to state that oil of oregano is not effective in preventing whooping cough and include an apology for publishing misleading statements. The company so far says they won't be commenting until it decides how to respond to the health department's request, and the company has until next Tuesday to submit a draft of its retraction. But so far, they haven't heard anything from this company. So again, you have this kind of shenanigans going on where you have untested claims for a condition that is extremely serious. We already have outbreaks. In fact, in that area, the Fraser Valley, they had 100 confirmed or suspected cases in 2 months of whooping cough. And when looking up oregano oil, and I looked on consumerlab.com of what it's used for, it really isn't used for much. There's some claims that it helps treat yeast infections, but the reasoning is that it is toxic to different types of microorganisms, including fungi and parasites. But that only happens when they come in direct contact with the oregano oil, not when it's inside your body. In fact, you could say that vinegar, alcohol, and peroxide would do the same thing when you apply it to yeast cells and parasites and bacteria in a dish. Well, that's what oregano oil does as well, just like many herbal oils will do. But that's a far cry from then making the leap to say it's somehow going to prevent bacterial infections in your body. It just doesn't work like that. So if you have any comments about these couple of issues, I'm more than happy to discuss them with you as well. Any other medical issues or concerns that you have, 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You are listening to Sunday House Call. Back with your calls in just a few minutes.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, Sunday House Call, News Talk Radio 580, CFRA.
They call me Dr.
580 CFRA's Sunday House Call, your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Call us at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or email the doctor, sundayhousecall@cfra.com.
When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning, fever all through the night.
And back to the phone lines, and a good afternoon to Marina in Ottawa.
Hello.
Hello, Marina.
Hello. Hi. I'm really very nervous right now.
Don't be nervous.
I've never called in before.
That's okay. Don't be nervous.
What I'm calling about is my son, who is 53 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He has fibromyalgia. He's had it for about 28 years.
Okay.
Now, he always takes his medication and, you know, always has done that.
Mm-hmm.
He's had surgery for lumps on his chest.
Okay.
And the last surgery he had, it was very bad, and he still has pain from it, and it's excruciating pain.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't, nothing seems to help it except morphine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he went to his general practitioner, doctor, went there, and mm-hmm. she in June discharged him as her patient.
How come?
The only thing we can figure out is this: when he was there, and he has done this before, he had to have a urine test.
Mm-hmm.
Now this time, he was in the office, and the doctor said something about. About various things mm-hmm. about his personal life, which was not right. And then she said, "Now, if she'll have to have, he will have to have a test, a urine test." So he had taken his medication around 7 in the morning,
okay.
And this was at 4 in the afternoon. And he'd had a Coke previous to going to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the doctor wanted a urine test, he said he couldn't. Come back next day. She said, no, you can't come back next day. You have to do it now.
Mm-hmm.
So he sat there and he drank 5 or 6 big glasses of water. Finally, then he went. We went on a holiday. We took him on a holiday. He is on disability, by the way.
Okay.
We went on a holiday. My husband and I took him with us for a week. When he got back from the holiday, there was a registered letter for him, stating that the doctor discharged him as a patient because he was not compatible with her or something like that. I can't remember the exact words.
Okay.
So since this time, he has been looking for a doctor. He can't find a doctor anywhere. He's gone everywhere. One doctor said no, he didn't have the expertise to take him.
Mm-hmm.
The other doctor said no. He would not take any fibromyalgia people that had fibromyalgia.
Okay.
And so right now he's had a lot of pain. He's gone through an awful lot of sweats and pain and he's had diarrhea, terrible, which he can't seem to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
Some days it's really, really bad, other days it isn't. Just want to know, what can he do now? What can he do?
I don't know if he's tried this yet, but the family medicine teaching centers at both Elizabeth Briere and at Melrose near the Ottawa Civic Hospital usually take on new patients.
Oh, is it teaching?
Yeah, it's through the University of Ottawa. It's the family medicine residency program where the residents are supervised by staff physicians. And there's, if you're closer to the Civic Hospital,
yes.
It's at it's the Melrose, it's called the Melrose Family Medicine Center,
Melrose.
But it's right connected to the hospital.
Oh, Melrose Medicine
yeah.
Center.
Yeah, so it's through the University of Ottawa. The best thing is just to call up the Civic Hospital switchboard and say if they could connect you to the Family Medicine clinic at Melrose, and they'll do that. And they're likely, I mean, they usually take on the new patients, so that might be something as an option for your son, so that he can have access to a family doctor.
He's gone everywhere, just everywhere. So, he does have rheumatoid arthritic doctor. Mm-hmm.
So he has many conditions that are contributing to his discomfort.
Rheumatoid arthritic, very bad. And he's having a lot of problems. And lately now I'm worried because he seems to be just giving up.
Well, I don't think they would refuse him. So I think you should on Tuesday just give them a call. And book an appointment. I know that the residents take on new patients for many reasons. One, to provide care, but also to learn as well.
Yes. Oh.
And so if he has fibromyalgia and rheumatoid arthritis, that would also provide them with an understanding of how to treat the condition.
That would be so good. And the lumps in his chest, you see, I don't know what he did. At one time, he did have... I'm trying to think of something on the lungs, blood clots on the lungs.
Mm-hmm.
And I read where this could have caused the lumps on his chest.
Probably not. There's probably two separate things. But again, these are things to bring up in the history when he sees the physician there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I would do, Marina, because that way at least he can have access to the system and be looked after.
Yeah. His name is with the medical content, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
But they haven't called him at all. Nobody.
Yeah, that's I think you should take matters into your own hands and call up that family medicine center.
And this is what we've been doing. We've called everywhere, everywhere.
Okay, well, give that a shot, Marina, and see how that works.
You think this will help?
I would think so. If I don't think they refuse patients, so I would give them a call and see how that goes.
Oh, how come nobody told us about this?
I have no idea.
I mean, he's spoken to people, all medical places.
Well, a lot of times they just focus on the practices that are in the city, but not the teaching centers. But
that's wonderful.
Yeah, so give that a shot.
Yeah. Also, you mentioned last week about the foot and hand. Marina,
I actually have to go on to the next call now. So.
Okay, well, thank you so very much.
You're very welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. We're going to go to line 7 and Bill in Brockville. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Doctor.
How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I had a carpal tunnel operation about 3.5 months ago.
Yeah.
And after the stitches were taken out, I followed an exercise program, and the hands the fingers weren't too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly numbness at the tips. But then in the last couple of weeks, the numbness has got very strong. You almost say when you touch something, it's as though you're not touching something at all.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to the exercise, I did the hot and cold water submersion, which helps a bit. And I wear a support, not all the time,
but
occasionally. And so what I'm just concerned about is about 3.5 months now. I hear sometimes these operations are not always successful. I don't know. I can still bend my fingers down and touch the middle of my palm and bend the thumb over, which I believe is supposed to take longer to heal.
Right.
But at this point here, should I be looking into some other solutions? Is there something that I don't know whether this is something to be concerned about or whether I should... I know that there's some other service I should use as well.
Well, depending on how severe the injury was prior to the surgery, it can take sometimes 6 months or longer for it to completely resolve. And in addition, if there is use of the hand and a resumption of normal activity, it may actually make things a bit worse over time because you still have an injury. Even though you do the release with the surgery, and alleviate some of the pressure on the nerve. The nerve has been wounded, and it can take up to 6 months to heal. And if you're using the hand and the wrist and bending it, you can still exacerbate that. So what I would say is to see your family doctor. They may want to do another test to check the nerve function in there, but they may want to ease back on some of the exercise to alleviate some of that stress on the nerve.
Yeah, a little stressful, I mean.
Yeah.
I see. Well, that's fine. I'll speak to him about it. I'm just a little concerned. I seem to be more strong, and I don't know what really to expect in this type of thing, but I'm an older person, so...
Well, Bill, I wish it works out for you, but I think probably taking a little bit easier. We have to take a break for the news.
Okay.
All the best.
For sure.
And we'll head off for the news. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. Listen to Sunday House Call. Back in just 2 or 3 minutes.
Dr. Barry Dworkin. Sunday House Call. News Talk Radio 580. CFRA. The advice and recommendations in this program are for general educational purposes and not a diagnosis. You should consult a physician or health professional directly before beginning or changing any course of health treatment. 580 CFRA's Sunday House Call. Your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Call us at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or email the doctor, sundayhousecall@cfra.com.
And back to the phone lines. And a good afternoon to Robert in Rockland. Hello, Robert.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, how are you?
I'm very good.
Good.
First thing I want to say is I commend you. Your show was awesome.
Thank you.
I try to watch it every week. You're brilliant. And I wish you were my family doctor.
Thank you.
I mean, your knowledge is unbelievable. Anyway, I have a new doctor, and she's young. And I went and seen her because my left arm was going numb.
Okay.
And I did strain it. And I went for an ultrasound. And she said I had two ganglions and two swollen lymph nodes.
Okay.
And she told me to wait a month. And if it didn't go away, to come back and see her.
Right.
And I was just a little concerned with the lymph node part. If I should actually get a second opinion or wait a month. Just I didn't know really. I know it's an infection, she said, but I feel fine, and I'm just a little concerned maybe it's something else, and if you would think I should get a second opinion on the lymph nodes or other testing.
Well, it's a good question, and sure, when you hear that there's lymph nodes found on a test, you wonder what those lymph nodes represent. It's important, and the key things that you mentioned is that they're solitary nodes. They're single nodes that were found. Usually, if you're dealing with tumors or cancers or things of that, or lymphomas, usually the lymph nodes are all jumbled together and stuck together in one big mass.
Which would show in an ultrasound.
Which would show on ultrasound on certain areas. Absolutely.
Okay.
The other issue is that lymph nodes do become more noticeable when there's been any damage to a part of the body or an infection, because lymph nodes' primary purpose is to produce antibodies to help defend your body against damage. In this case, it could be infection or any inflammatory changes.
Okay.
And so the lymph nodes, especially if it's on the same side where you've hurt your arm,
correct.
It's not surprising that they may find that there. And one of the things that we want to try and avoid is when doing a test, sometimes when we do a test, we find things that would normally be there all the time, but had we not done the test, we wouldn't have known it was there in the first place. And it wouldn't be doing any damage to you. So in this case, they found some lymph nodes, but if it is from damage to the arm and inflammation, then waiting the month is reasonable, because what you'll see is that those lymph nodes will probably regress over time and completely, well, not disappear, but become less noticeable.
Okay, because so, the numbness has been probably, I mean, it's not steady, it's sporadic, but probably about a month now.
Yeah.
I know I did strain very hard.
Yes.
And
so you damaged tissue in the area too.
Correct.
Yeah. So it's quite understandable that you're going to have enlarged lymph nodes because of the inflammation your body's trying to repair itself and repair that area. So you are going to see that. For the same reason that you'll have lymph nodes that pop up, I had someone this week who had a cut on their head. They hit their head and they had a laceration, and they had a lymph node that appeared behind their ear on the same side of where they hurt themselves.
Okay.
And they were wondering about the lymph node. I said it's called a reactive lymphadenopathy.
That's what she called it, actually.
Yeah.
Reactive.
That's right. And so it's just simply responding to the damage that's done to the body. It's very normal. And again, when they're solitary, in this case, the same thing with his head, it was solitary. It was just one lymph node that felt like a jelly bean that just moved around underneath the skin.
Yes.
It is completely normal to see that. In fact, you'd be surprised not to see that. if in those situations. So it's probably best, instead of poking and prodding you and doing all kinds of stuff that could actually cause you harm, is probably to wait that time to allow your body to heal up, let the arm heal, we don't have pain anymore, and then have that checked out again. And I'm pretty sure you're going to find that those lymph nodes have returned to normal.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time. And as far as the billing and McGinty, you guys deserve every bloody cent you get. I'm 100% opposed to the regulations that are coming in. And you got a fantastic show, and I love watching your listening to your show every week.
Thank you very much, Robert.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
And over to line one, and Ben in Ashton. Good afternoon.
Hi, Doc. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you. I just wanted to ask you a quick question. I'm 37 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And like a lot of 37-year-old guys, I was pretty active, but I've also eaten my share of McDonald's and barbecued some sausages and hot dogs.
Right.
So what I'm wondering is, I'm sure there are some clogs in my arteries. And going forward, gun to your head, are there some foods that I can eat that will help unclog those arteries?
Actually, there's foods that are out there that you shouldn't eat that probably will help your heart. So it's the reverse that's true. Our arteries will gradually build up some plaques. Everybody, that starts when we're about 20 years old. So it's very common. It's the extent to which it gets clogged up and the things that we can do globally in our lives that will make a difference. So for example, processed foods, heavily saturated fatty foods, those are obviously things that will contribute to potentially fatty deposits in the heart. Although cholesterol in and of itself, and this is what people tend to sometimes forget, is that only 15% of our total cholesterol can be attributed to our diets. The rest is a function of how our liver produces cholesterol, which is why we tend to see family histories and family histories of heart disease where cholesterol levels tend to be high and it's inherited. And so when we're trying to look at ways to reduce the risk of heart disease, we're looking at maintaining normal blood pressure, and that is accomplished by regular exercise, usually both aerobic and some resistance training. Staying away from, as I mentioned, the heavily fatty foods, processed foods, lots of fruits and vegetables, fish, essentially what we call the Mediterranean diet, where there is a very little, not as much beef, not as much dairy, but a lot of fruits and vegetables and chicken and fish. Now, that doesn't mean you restrict yourself to that, but it just, you tend to see in those populations, and that's in southern Italy or northern Italy, that they have this diet, less incidence of heart disease. So it is, the foods that we eat do play a role in terms of maintaining our health, but it's a combination of exercise, not smoking, staying active, sleeping well. For example, people that tend to have jobs where they're not getting enough sleep can interfere and actually increase their risk of heart disease, depression, all kinds of other stuff. Weight gain in and of itself is harmful because that can lead over time to diabetes and sleep apnea, which also can affect the heart. But in terms of specific foods, it's essentially eat real food. That's basically the bottom line. Enjoy your life. Eat stuff that you like to eat, but stay away from the processed stuff. As you mentioned, all the McDonald's and fast food stuff. Sure, on occasion people do that, and you know what? Big deal. But if it becomes a regular part of someone's dietary lifestyle, and that does mean a lot of people, I mean, there's a reason why these fast food places make so much, then that becomes an issue. So it is. So there's no magic food, despite what you may hear in terms of advertisements or health food stores. There's no magic bullet for preventing heart disease, because heart disease is more complex than just the food that we eat. It's also all the things that we do during our day that have a role in play and influence.
Okay, great. And obviously those cleanses, you wouldn't recommend any cleanse. That really doesn't do anything for you, correct?
That is correct. There is no evidence that, you know, cleaning your body of what they call toxins and taking these products does anything for you. And the reason is that we have two organs in our body that do that. We have our kidneys and our liver whose primary purpose is to eliminate stuff that from our metabolism that could cause us harm if it builds up, and also to produce the products that our body needs in order to survive. And there is nothing that you can really ingest or inject or through enemas, the colon cleanses. There's nothing in that that has any basis in physiology. There's nothing that you can do that eliminates so-called toxins, whatever they may be. So it's more a marketing gimmick. It's more to make people feel like somehow they're doing something. But in all reality, it's just enriching the pockets of those who want to fool you to think that you're actually doing something helpful for yourself.
That's awesome, Doc. I appreciate that. I'm going to limit my Big Mac intake to once a month. Going
That's great. Okay.
Thanks so much.
All the best. Bye-bye now. 521-TALK, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is the number to call. And what I think we're going to do is, because we're coming up close to the break, we're going to take an early break now so we have more time to discuss with Michelle electronic cigarettes, and Tony in Ottawa, who'd like to talk about pain in the right side of the abdomen. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You are listening to Sunday House Call. And we'll be back in just a few minutes with your calls and questions.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, Sunday House Call, News Talk Radio 580, CFRA.
And I thought I was only dreaming, yeah. I could see them.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, Sunday House Call, News Talk Radio 580, CFRA.
Back to the phone lines, and a good afternoon to Michelle and Aylmer.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, thanks. I heard part of your comments on Wednesday about smoking cessation.
Yes.
And, geez, I wish I had heard that before the beginning of the summer when I doled out a couple of $100 for the laser. But anyway, I've researched, and now I'm ordering the electronic cigarette kit.
Okay.
And I have a question with regards to whether or not, can the patch be used at the same time, like to give it everything at the same time? Well, because of the nicotine and the electronic cigarette, would that not be advisable?
Yeah, I think it's probably better not to combine them, because then you may get too much nicotine that way. Usually the electronic cigarette is devised to give you about 10 puffs of the electronic cigarette is equivalent to one full cigarette. And they, depending on the model of the electronic cigarette chosen, they either can provide 100 puffs or 1,000, depending on the chamber. So the issue, though, is that it's a nicotine delivery system no different than the patch. It just mimics more of a certain behavior to make it easier to cope with smoking cessation. So it's for the same reason that you wouldn't use the patch and then take nicotine gum, right? It's the same kind of thing. You don't want to get nicotine toxicity and get really agitated either. So
okay. So
you don't want to combine them. And I think it's great that you're trying to stop. Obviously, the laser didn't work for you.
No, I was happy. I just didn't quit smoking.
But the e-cigarettes, again, in the U.S., so you ordered it from the U.S.?
It's actually out of Montreal.
Oh, it is? Okay.
And after hearing you on Wednesday, I happen to be somewhere on Friday where three different people have ordered through the same place, and
okay,
it's worked for them.
Oh, good. Yeah, it mimics smoking. I mean, it's, you know, ideally, it's a good step for people to get away from all the junk that's in cigarettes, because all that's in this is the nicotine and some propylene glycol and some vegetable resin stuff to give it some consistency. And that's pretty much it. And so you're really just getting the nicotine as opposed to all the other stuff that's in the cigarette. So you aren't creating the same, in any way, the same degree of damage to your body that you're doing when you're smoking. You're not going to get a progression of lung disease or heart disease or any of the other diseases associated with smoking, because it's just the nicotine itself.
So am I understanding correctly that as far as secondhand smoke goes, the fake smoke that comes out, that is also not...
It's also not anything that is particularly bothersome to anybody else because, again, there is nothing... It's a vapor that's... It's essentially combusted. The vegetable oil and the propylene glycol and the nicotine is combusted electronically in the cigarette, forming a vapor. And you breathe that in. The nicotine is delivered. When you breathe out, there's hardly anything left in there. And even so, the nicotine in and of itself, the vapor is not a smoke per se. It's not the same heavy blue smoke that comes out when you're smoking, and it dissipates in the air. So it's not the same thing at all with regards to secondhand exposure, not in the least.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Michelle.
Okay.
And good luck.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now. 521-TALK, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372. Are the numbers to call, and we're going to go to line five, and good afternoon to Tony in Ottawa.
Oh, hi, Doctor.
Hi.
A question about, well, first of all, when I pass my urine, I find after I pass it, about 2 seconds later, there's more to come through.
Okay.
Or come out. And I also noticed around the same time frame within the last month, this has been happening a month and a half, I have pain on the right side of my abdomen.
Okay.
I don't know if that's something relating to this issue or not.
How old are you, Tony?
47.
47? Okay.
Yeah.
And so when urinating, you find that it sort of stalls a bit?
It stalls, and there's more to come out.
Yeah.
So I have to go back to the washroom. Kind of.
Okay, and do you tend to wake up at night more often to go to the bathroom?
Yeah, I have been, yeah.
Okay. So what are the common things that happen as we get older and as we approach the age of 50, and usually it's more often seen 50 and older, but it happens in men in their late 30s and 40s as well, is the prostate gland can get enlarged. I mean, it's normal for that to happen as men get older. The issue is because the prostate gland sits just under the bladder and the urethra, which transports the urine from the bladder to the outside, has to pass through the prostate gland. And if the gland as it gets larger puts pressure on that urethra. And so you have to, if you think of a ball valve mechanism, right, a pressure valve, where you have to generate a certain amount of pressure in order to get the valve to open up. Well, that's exactly what tends to happen when the prostate gets larger. So the only way the body compensates for that is the bladder fills up more with urine before you're able to urinate. And as it fills up more with urine, it generates more pressure, but it doesn't completely empty because you have that prostate gland that's acting as that pressure valve. So you always have urine that's left over in the bladder instead of being emptied out. And so because of that, the bladder is filling up much more quickly because it's already starting off with urine that shouldn't be there, and you end up going to the bathroom more often. The pain that you're having can be associated with that, but has to be evaluated to make sure there's nothing else that's giving you that pain. But what happens is if the bladder starts getting too large, or what we call distended, because the prostate gland is blocking it too much, that in itself can cause pain and spasm in the bladder and can give you pain. It can be on the right side. It usually is central. But nevertheless, if you're noticing that this pain seems to be happening around the same time that you've been having the urinary problem, it does warrant usually an ultrasound to be done to check the size of the prostate gland, to check the bladder. What they usually will do too is then they'll ask you to drink water first before going for the ultrasound, and then they ask you to go to the bathroom to empty your bladder, and they check to see again, they do the ultrasound, they check to see how much urine is left over. And by doing that, they can also tell whether the gland is having an effect on bladder function. But they'll also check the organs in the, you know, in the right side of your abdomen. They'll check everywhere and the pelvis in order to make sure that there's nothing else that can be contributing to that. But this isn't something that I would wait on, because if you're already having symptoms and you're having pain, the treatment for enlarged prostate glands is actually very straightforward and not difficult. There are medications available that relax the prostate gland and allow the urine to flow very easily. And that usually works within just a couple of days. And then
No surgery.
No, you wouldn't do surgery on an enlarged prostate at the beginning. You always use medication. You don't want to do interventions unless there is some significant urgency to do it. But usually the prostate gland responds to a medication that will relax it. and allows you to urinate normally. And then there's another medication that's usually taken at the same time because it takes about 6 months to work. And that works by shrinking the gland down and trying to return it back to a normal size so that it's not causing that problem with the bladder. That being said, usually once you start taking medications to control the prostate gland, it usually means you're taking it for life because the minute you stop, the gland starts to get larger again. And that's just the normal process of that gland. But nevertheless, it's not normal for you to be going to the bathroom more frequently and having that pain. And also, it's the sputtering. If you're noticing that you start and then it sputters and then it starts again, that's usually because the gland, that's that pressure valve that I'm mentioning. When that gland is enlarged and it's putting pressure on the ureter, the urethra, the urine starts to flow through, but it's not. It takes a few seconds for it to start flowing properly because it's spasming around the urethra and causing that sputtering to occur.
Okay, no need to worry about prostate cancer in this case? Or?
Usually prostate cancer doesn't give you those kind of symptoms. Prostate cancer doesn't cause the overall gland to enlarge. You get tumors within the gland, but it doesn't usually cause this kind of urinary problem. This is more the entire gland is getting larger, all equally, all around, and that's what's acting as that pressure valve. So it's very unlikely to be prostate cancer, especially at your age.
So I would be taking medication for the rest of my life regarding this matter?
Usually it's medication to shrink. If it is an enlarged prostate, then it is medication to shrink it down. But again, it's quality of life. You don't want to have prostate that's so large that you end up having to have surgery because it's too late to use the medication.
Oh, I see.
So I hope that helps you, Tony.
Oh, thank you very much. So my family doctor, I should see.
Yeah, you just see your family doctor, and it's a very straightforward condition to evaluate and treat.
With the ultrasound.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. All the best.
Take care.
You too. And my thanks to Ted Raymond for producing Sunday House Call, and your calls, always wonderful and interesting. And we'll be back next week with another edition of Sunday House Call. Everyone, have a great week.